I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Deladon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Double Clutch Podcast. I'm Mike Miller, and tonight I'm joined by a man who's made three correct and eerily specific player transaction predictions within the last couple of weeks. It is, they all came true, it's unbelievable, but it is New York Nyxtradamus Whitfield.
Hey Mike, how's it going?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to predict the winning lottery numbers now.
Well, when you got them, just let me know because I'm all in on that. I'm buying into your wisdom, and I'm calling that premium rate hotline you have for predictions, not the other one. I'm pretty good. Have you enjoyed any of this eased lockdown we've now entered? Have you been out to the gym, got your hair cut, had a pint?
I kind of planned to do at least one of those things, and I felt rough all day, so I felt I'd do the responsible thing and stay at home. So no, I have done nothing. How about you, Mike?
Well, I have had a haircut, but I didn't go out for it. I got my missus to just butcher it. So
just to celebrate the day anyway.
Right, exactly.
Haircut day.
I've got no idea what it looks like here, but I tend to take that approach anyway because I'm pretty sure it's just pink skin where there was once hair. Lockdown's easing. And weirdly, I'm going to tell everyone this anyway. I had the weirdest, I don't know if you know this, but I shared it on Twitter. Twitter? Yeah, and Discord earlier. But I had a really weird situation happen today. From the NBA, we got into it in the 90s. Channel 4 was Mark Webster. Well, he tweeted earlier, randomly, this picture of a fox saying, "Go on, foxes," or something or other. And I was like, that's a bit of a weird tweet. And I clicked on it, and it was a tweet from another Webster about a pub opening. And the pub happens to be the pub on my street. And it's now called The Fox. And obviously his brother, who apparently is a regional DJ or a local DJ over here in Ashford, Kent, who I was not aware of, is involved with it along with Neil Razor Ruddock from... which is just the weirdest sort of collaboration I could have ever come up with. But I was quite tempted to go up for a pint, but I'm being responsible and not.
Is he from that area? I'd always had him down as like an East London guy.
See, I Googled it and he's not from this area. He is a London boy and he played... we're talking about... Which one are we
Mark
talking
Webster.
About? Webby? Mark Webster. He's a London boy, definitely. Hmm. And so's Ruddock, although he lives here. And I did once bump into him in Asda, I want to say, which would have been about 8 years ago. But yeah, that was a really random start to the day for me. But yeah, I thought, well, it's loosely basketball related. I couldn't believe it. I tweeted him back saying, this is just bizarre. And he said, how do you like them onions or something like that, which is typical Mark Webster sort of weird awesomeness. Welcome to the show, everybody. If you're not already, please make sure you're following us at Double Clutch UK, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We have a Discord where you can talk hoops with us every day of the week, discord.me/doubleclutch. If you're watching us live right now on Twitch, the chat's already popping. Hello to everyone in there. twitch.tv/doubleclutch UK. If you listen just to our lovely velvety voices, thank you for doing so. Make sure you subscribe, whatever platform service you use, and rate us because it always helps. And finally, thank you to the man behind the scenes, sitting in the back of the bus because he's cool like that, Mr. Kirk Killick.
Oh, sexy girlfriend!
can't take him anywhere. So let's start with some NBA news. It's been a pretty awesome week in terms of what we've seen on court. Paul George was player of the week. That's an oxymoron, isn't it? But Paul George, 33.7 points per game this week, 5.7 assists, 60.9% from the field, leading the Clippers to a 4-0 record. He has got Western Player of the Week award. Jason Tatum in the East, 31.5 points, 8.5 rebounds, 3.8 assists, leading the Celtics to a 3-1 record. We had London's finest, OG Anunoby, getting fined for body slamming Dennis Schroeder. We had savage dunks this week, including Mo Harkless. Did you see that Mo Harkless dunk?
Yeah, that was pretty tough.
Yeah, I would describe it as nastier than a Lambuna fart in a lift, if I was going to be quite blunt about it. And then we obviously had Miles Bridges' dunk last night that basically ended Clint Capela. The Suns and the Jazz, the top two teams in the West, went head-to-head in an overtime battle. The Lakers, riddled with injuries, somehow beat the Nets. And last night, we've already mentioned Tatum, but last night the Celtics absolutely just came back on the Nuggets. 40-8 run, erasing Aaron Gordon's perfect 8-0 start. Pretty epic week, in fairness, considering it's supposed to be sort of the dog days of the season now and sort of everyone gearing up for the playoffs, which isn't far away. What was your favourite moment of the week?
So, first of all, actually, I just want to say a special thanks to everyone live with us today for not going to the pub right now. So, appreciate that. And
they're on mobile devices. They could well be in the pub.
That's true. That's very true. I think my favourite moment this week, keeping it Knicks-related, was game against the Grizzlies on Saturday, I believe it was. RJ Barrett really showing he's probably our best clutch player. Game tying layup, crucial three in the overtime to win the game. And I think it's a broader part of no one really watched the Knicks last season, completely understandably, other than Knicks fans. And so I think a lot of people just saw the numbers for Barrett and thought, pretty inconsistent rookie campaign, but he's really starting to put things together and really looks like an impressive player. I saw someone tweet that like Knicks fans were getting overexcited because that like Chris Middleton was his ceiling or something. Chris Middleton was still at college when he was the age RJ Barrett is now, scoring fewer points than RJ Barrett is in the NBA. So it feels like a bit of a strange comparison to me, but
is that even that bad of a comparison?
It's not bad. Right. I just think I don't understand where that's coming from, where he doesn't play anything like him and the comparison at the same age is off.
Do you think it's maybe because given that he's in such a hypermedia market, we don't hear that much about him. So maybe there's the at least impression that he's got an introvert personality to a degree. Or maybe I'm just missing out on all the RJ Barrett just craziness.
Yeah, I think he's been one of those guys for a number of years, even playing for the Canadian national teams coming through. He was one of those super mature type of characters. So he's not going to be going on Instagram Live with strippers like Paul Pierce, for example. Well, more on that later.
More on that later. So let's turn to some quite serious news briefly. The Nets game tonight, on Monday night, versus the Timberwolves has been suspended following the shooting and civil unrest in Minnesota and the death of Dante Wright. What a horrific, another instance of a horrific situation involving the death of a black man in the United States. It's been basically a year of horrible moments like this. And, you know, we were going to talk about the Timberwolves anyway, but we can't not talk about that. It's just, you know, it's just ridiculous. This sort of thing is still happening. We're by no means qualified to speak on it to a degree that it's not been our experience. And we, you know, quite clearly aren't black Americans. But it's just shit that this still carries on the way, you know, it does. And as often and as frequently as it does. But we were going to talk about the Timberwolves anyway, because there is a transition of ownership happening. So we knew that Glenn Taylor wanted to be out for a while, and there was talk of KG trying to put together a team of, you know, a buying group to take over the team. But it's not. It's a baseball player who has, you know, lots of money from baseball, who I don't know because I don't follow baseball, but Alex Rodriguez is part of this purchasing group. What do you think about this move? Do you think it's a good thing for the Timberwolves?
I don't think it could be a bad thing necessarily. If an owner doesn't want to be there, and it's not like the Timberwolves have been succeeding based on his ownership structure and style. So I don't think it can be a bad thing. I think the real kick in the nuts, though, is for Kevin Garnett, who went out of his way to try and be involved in an acquisition group as part of the Timberwolves, obviously the greatest player in franchise history. And it almost feels deliberate to not only sell the team to someone else, but a professional athlete-led consortium from a different sport who's got nothing to do with the city of Minnesota or the sport of basketball. It seems like a very... it feels like a bit of a statement to sell to that group.
Yeah, I get that. Especially, you know, the bad blood between them runs deep. And, I mean, to the point where KG's 21 doesn't hang in the rafters, and yet his 5 does in Boston. And to me, you say KG, my mind is immediately number 21. He was incredible there. It's a shame that he's not been given the opportunity. Well, maybe he has, but it's not public. But it just feels like he's being cut out of the deal a bit. I'm hoping that being a failing professional athlete, but you know, this, I'm speaking for A-Rod here, not for me, obviously. Once he has majority ownership, he just starts selling bits to KG and just like, come on, I got you.
I was just going to say one part of discussion I've seen is concern on one hand because A-Rod actually started his baseball career in Seattle.
That's exactly what I was going to say to you.
which led to some speculation that there may be some intention there. I'm not sure if I agree with it. A-Rod played the vast majority of his career for the Yankees in New York, so it seems like a tenuous connection to me. I feel like if Seattle, hopefully when Seattle gets a franchise, it'll be through expansion rather than another city losing their team.
Yeah, I was going to ask you whether you bought into that. I think, you know, he was there in his early career, but didn't spend the majority there. I don't know if he's a massive Seattle guy. It just seems a bit bizarre. I mean, I get that Minnesota's not a big market. I wouldn't have any issue if they did move the team to Seattle. Seattle deserves a team. I'm not saying that Minnesota doesn't, but I would love to see a team back in Seattle. I don't know if anyone doesn't want that to happen.
It would just seem a bit cruel for Seattle to gain a team in a similar way to it lost its own team.
Weren't they almost got Sacramento a few years back.
Mm.
And when the brothers who owned it began with M, I can't remember the name, but they sold to Viva Rondadive, but they were very close to selling to a Seattle-based group. So I think that Seattle would take any team at this point. We've got about a month left in the regular season with the play-in starting on the 18th of May. So I thought we'd talk about the MVP race, which is, I say, quickly becoming. It's been a bit strange all season, but this is possibly the strangest MVP race in NBA history. Certainly it is in recent memory. It's a really close race. There's no clear-cut winner. And I wondered if it's just like a byproduct of this strange season we're experiencing or whether it's just something has changed in general. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on it because this is a really bizarre situation where we've had, first off, Giannis wasn't getting the MVP and there's still a broader discussion on that, but now he's considered in the running. Then it was Embiid. He's been injured. LeBron's been injured. And now Jokic, who we at Double Clutch have been talking about for a while as being the MVP, is now the firm favourite, it seems, despite the fact there's not actually that much buzz about that being a topic at the minute. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on it.
It is strange for a number of reasons. I think all of the leading candidates, as you just said, have missed games, and I think that's chance more than anything else. It doesn't feel like we're playing more back-to-backs or anything. The season's a bit congested, but it doesn't seem like it's so congested that we'd have a significant amount more injuries or strategically missed games, for example. I think there's a few guys being left off. I know we're going to do our top fives in a moment, so I won't go too much into it, but there's some guy, like, I don't have him in my top five, for example, but Donovan Mitchell is the best player for a team that is storming through the regular season and no one is mentioning his name at all, which is interesting to me because normally the kind of best player on the team with the best record by default gets at least a mention.
Yeah, it is bizarre. And even, you know, the Suns, they've got the second best record in the NBA and there's not really talk as to whether they have an MVP. It's which of their stars is more deserving of being included in the MVP conversation. And if you look at the NBA.com power rankings, 9 and 10 is Booker and Chris Paul, respectively. It's really bizarre. Neither of them, rather, make the Basketball Reference top 10, which is a weird model based on what they think previous voting results show. And it's if we look at the Jazz, they've only got one candidate, and it's Rudy Gobert, who I don't think for a minute anyone would consider voting, you know, bar Utah media would consider voting the league MVP. So I find it's really, really quite odd. I mean, there have been odd MVP races in the past, where like Magic in 1990 got less first place votes than Barkley and still won it. Malone beating MJ in 97, Malone beating Alonzo Mourning and Tim Duncan in 99. Nash Shaq was 05, and that was close. And then I think 16-17 was the really close race between Kawhi, Westbrook and Harden. But there were sort of three names in the running, even in the most congested one of those. Here we could have sort of like four or five guys, but each of them have got ways of detracting them, you know, the validity of their candidacy. Well, I should not string words like that together. So I guess we'll go through our top fives then. So who have you got in fifth place?
In fifth place, I have Giannis.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard to fault him. And he's played incredibly well again. And I've talked about this a million times now, but I think there is a hangover, or there will be a hangover with voters in that, and rightly or wrongly, because no one has actually defined what the MVP award actually is or what it means. So rightly or wrongly, I think voters will think, oh, hang on, the Bucks have disappointed in the last couple of playoffs. We're not voting for this guy again. Even just voter fatigue in general of voting for the same person. So I think he'll suffer for that reason.
So to clarify then, your top five is based on your thinking of how it will pan out versus your...
No, I am not immune from those same trends I'm talking about. Okay. So this is my personal top five.
Okay. I have Embiid at fifth, because as dominant and incredible as he has been, he got injured and his team went 8-3 without him, which to me just means his value, however great it is when he's there, isn't actually missed all that much when he's not,
yep.
If that makes sense. So who have you got in the fourth spot then?
I have Embiid at four. I don't think we differ in opinion very much there.
Okay. In fourth place, I've got James Harden, who I think would be a lot higher had he been with the Nets the whole season. And I get that what he's done there has been phenomenal, and even to the point where he's currently out or has been out recently and the team were 2-3 without him. And the record when they're with him is fantastic. The record with and without him is not good at all. So I think he definitely deserves some love and should be in the race completely. But I don't think the overall body of work for the team is there, despite the fact he's about to set the triple-double record for the franchise, having been there like three quarters of a season, a congested season. So who do you have at number three?
The King, LeBron James.
Okay.
I think he was higher earlier in the season. I think he's missed too many games to be higher than third.
I don't have him in my top five, which
I can see
is,
that.
But it's a bizarre thing to think about, because if in a vacuum,
yeah,
he is certainly the best player in the league.
And this may clarify why I've left some people off this list who some people may be expecting to see in it. My own interpretation of MVP is how good is the team if you remove this one player from it in a vacuum, based on what I've seen. And I think from what we've seen in the Lakers since LeBron has not played, it kind of shows me how important he is for that team. Because without him, like, that could be a first round exit.
Yeah, I get that, but they also lost AD as well, which is where I'm trying, because I use a similar approach, but I don't know at what point, because obviously AD went down not long before.
I also
LeBron
have just
did.
way more of a sample with Anthony Davis in New Orleans. I've seen teams based around Anthony Davis, and they've never been very good. So how I weigh his contribution to winning without LeBron isn't as high as someone who I've seen do it themselves.
That's fair. I can accept that. In third, I have Giannis. Again, phenomenal season. I think a lot of the struggles the Bucks experienced was because of the style of season it is. I think if they'd had a training camp, we wouldn't have seen those issues. Recently, he's had an injury as well, which I think has knocked him back, even though it's shown that, you know, he's vitally important there because they were also 2-3 without him. Your second spot then?
Nikola Jokic. I think he's been incredible. He would be top of my list if their record was just slightly better. And that feels harsh, but I've got nothing else to say for myself why he's second and not first.
Now you've got me guessing based purely on the remark about the record. You've got me trying to figure out who you have at number one.
You will not guess.
I will not guess.
Because no one else has got this
it's
player
Nick,
at number
isn't
one.
It?
No.
It's Julius Randle.
Yes. So is it. It's Frank Ntilikina.
At number two, I've got the guy I thought you were going to have number one, which is Dame, who is has just been phenomenal all season in all aspects. But again, it's the record holding it back for me. So I this is where I wonder whether we're going to flip flop. So go on then.
Okay, you did guess who I've got Damian Lillard.
And I've got Jokic.
Because Damian Lillard, I've watched a lot of Blazers this year just because I've enjoyed watching them. Based on my interpretation of the MVP, the Blazers without Damian Lillard this season would not be in even playoff contention. The guy,
absolutely,
he's leading clutch points in the NBA. He leads most 3 points made in the clutch, and he's tied with James Harden for free throws made in the clutch. So if you get in a close game, I think he is literally the best player in the NBA at the end of a close game. And I think my asterisk here is based on my interpretation. If I was voting for the best player this season, by a different definition, I probably would have voted James Harden as number one. I think he's been the best player this season overall. But by my own definition, I haven't included him just based on that.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, Dame's kept them afloat with horrific injuries to CJ McCollum, Yusuf Nurkic, which have put them out for a long time. But they haven't really, now those guys are back, jumped up, which is a bit of a surprise as well, which suggests maybe more weight should be given to Dame's overall performance on that team. They still suck defensively, which isn't solely down to him.
I also, I was puzzled by them letting Gary Trent Jr. leave, who's absolutely been lighting it up in Toronto since he left.
Yep.
And Norm Powell's been fine. He had one big game. But again, I remain confused why they made that trade.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bizarre one. And I'm very glad to say that I picked up Gary Trent off the free agent market in my fantasy league the other day. And then he promptly went out and dropped, 45 points or something like that? Yeah, I get the Dame talk. I honestly don't think he gets enough attention. You know, we constantly say he's underrated, but I think it's purely because the market he's in. Like, if you put him anywhere else, and people would be just talking about him all the time. But I don't know, because you've used the argument that I would use as well for Jokic, in that, you know, Jamal Murray's missed time and he's missing time now with knee soreness. Michael Porter Jr. has been in and out of COVID protocols.
Yeah, I could completely see an argument for Jokic as one, absolutely. I think, to be honest, any of these five plus Harden are acceptable winners based on what we've seen.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and the other crazy thing is,
mad about any of those guys winning, because as we say, this is a weird year. There's no one standout candidate.
And we're talking about guys from the 4th and 6th seed in their conference potentially winning the MVP, which doesn't happen very often at all. Westbrook's MVP, I think they were the 6th seed that season, but he averaged a triple-double. So, I mean, do you think it's literally because the season is weird this year, you know, with compacted schedules, COVID protocols, all things like that, and the injuries? Or do you think there has been a greater appreciation amongst, whether it's media coverage or just fan appetite, for something bigger than just the box score stats, that's sort of creating this drive to look at guys outside of the, you know, the LeBrons, the KDs? Obviously KD's been injured, but you know, outside of the league's top two or three players.
I actually interpret it slightly differently, and it's going to link to, I think we're going to think about super teams a little bit later, but there's way more, the style of play has changed. In the 90s and 2000s, you'd have, like, let's take the Lakers, one of the most successful teams in that period. You have Shaq and Kobe putting up insane numbers every single night, and the rest of the team is role players, basically. That structure has completely changed now, where the talent level overall in the NBA is higher and teams are deeper and style of players change, where the ball moves more and there's more perimeter shooting. And I just feel like the days of like one or two guys on the best teams putting up all the numbers are more or less over, because you're just not going to be good in the NBA if you've got someone scoring mid 30 points per game and no one else doing much on the team. So I think it's as much...
kind of like the Harden-Houston model.
Yeah, exactly. It's as much the sport changing as it is anything else.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It just seems, you know, weird to me that we're suddenly... It just seems so much tighter before. There's no runaway winner, which is great because it keeps us guessing and being able to talk about it for... well, it feels like we've spoken about this now for about 3 months straight. So,
and I think it also comes into like what we're talking about, where guys from like four seeds or six seeds could be in the running for MVP, mostly because based on our historic understanding of what the award is, those guys are actually able to put up bigger numbers and play a more significant role than the deeper teams in the NBA, where any one player is not going to be so relied upon.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting what you said about your interpretation of it being, you know, if that player was removed from the team, how would team do? Question in the chat, UK Nets fans, isn't it the league MVP, not importance to each franchise? Which is an interesting sort of a point to make, because, you know, it is the league's award. But if you were going to go the most important player to the league, in terms of jersey sales, it's LeBron James for the past 15 years or so.
Yeah, I'm not sure I fully understand that question.
So I think maybe it's aimed at the way we're sort of dissecting a player's importance to a team rather than a player's importance to the overall league. I might be getting it wrong because it is literally like eight words that I'm just reading without context. But to me, it has to be the two go hand in hand. If you're important to your team, they are important in the league, and that's where it is. Do you think they should be clearer in the definition of most valuable player? This is a conversation we have almost annually. Do you think there should be a distinction between? We've obviously got defensive player of the year, so there isn't an offensive player of the year, and maybe there should be that distinction so that offensive stats don't carry additional weight in the MVP discussions?
I actually think not, because I'm a big stickler for tradition and being able to compare eras and stuff like that, and I wish there was a better definition from the first ever NBA MVP, for sure, and that would be more kind of consistent as we came through. But now that we've got this far without a very clear interpretation or definition, it would seem strange to me to introduce one now, where we have to accept that it's part popularity contest and part kind of PR campaign as a part of it, in that two equal players, the one with the more interesting story will typically win, which kind of detracts from the award a little bit. And I just think, having watched the NBA as long as I have, there's been, when you have transcendent players, it seems strange that they can be accepted as the best player in the league. Like Michael Jordan should have basically won it every year he played. You could make a similar argument for LeBron James. Kobe had a long stretch where it seemed like it was impossible he didn't win more than he did the MVP award. So, yeah, I think we just have to accept what it is at this point.
No, it's a never-ending argument to try and understand something we will never understand. So you mentioned it earlier, super teams. Well, there's been a lot of chat in our Discord about it this week. And it's this idea of super team recency bias. I know that everyone has jumped on, and we covered it reasonably a couple of weeks ago, discussing the buyout market and the assembly of what people are, you know, the super nets. And I don't get why it's such a big issue. I kind of do. I get that there's everyone has salt when it's not their team getting the stars. But this whole idea of super teams isn't new. I think someone said in the Discord that once LeBron goes, they would expect it to revert back to being, you know, less super teamy. But that's just not true, because we know, you know, just from our many years of fandom, we know that's not true. And if you go back further, we know that there's been super teams basically since the league started. So why do you think there is this feeling at the minute? And do you think it's ever going to change?
No, because it's very much a part of the growth of player empowerment that we're seeing, where increasingly players have more and more power to choose where they play, who they play with, how long they stay there. Like LeBron doing his rolling 1 year contracts, so he can essentially make a decision every year. But this is where I have an issue with it. I'm completely behind players getting to choose where they play, who they play with, blah, blah, blah. But the issue I have with it is not that at all. It's when those same players act like they should also be able to control how their decisions to do that are interpreted, which is not the case at all. If we take Kevin Durant, for example, when he signed with the Warriors, it's been pretty well publicized. The reason he eventually left the Warriors was because it was going to be Steph Curry's team, whatever he did, even though he was in his mind the best player and he beat LeBron in the finals. But no one was really kind of shouting from the rooftops Kevin Durant was now the league's best player, because he joined a team that was that good already before he joined there. So that's what I mean. Like, full power to Kevin Durant to go and do that. He played some incredible basketball, one of the best teams we have ever seen in the Warriors. But you don't also get to control the narrative. You don't get to do that. And I think there's a lot of recency bias with how people think of the Nets, and also with LeBron in general. People think of, oh, the Nets have teamed up to stop LeBron or whatever, but forget, LeBron was and still has been on his own super teams of his own creation. So it's hard to make that argument when LeBron is one of the creme de la creme of NBA history in forming super teams. I also think the Nets thing has been a bit overstated. I think the Heat got a lot more stick when the Heat All era, when Bosh, Wade and LeBron went there. And I just remember every single game being watched, and almost the entire league felt like they were rooting against Miami during that time. LeBron had his, in wrestling language, his heel turn during that period. Mm-hmm. And I think, I'm not going to say the Nets don't get any level of that. Of course they do, because they've got an outrageous level of talent on that team. But I also think fans are just a little bit desensitized to it now, where we've seen the Miami Heat with that roster. We saw the Golden State Warriors, and now we see the Nets. It's the normalized to have all those star players on one team. So I don't think it's going anywhere. My one critique, as I said, is if you get to choose where you play and everything, you don't get to control the narrative and how fans think about it.
Yeah, I agree with the bulk of that. What I don't understand is why anyone thinks teams won't stop trying to get better in any way, shape or form. It's not new. We've been brought up in our culture to believe that winning is almost, you know, they say it's not the winning, it's the taking part. Well, that's bollocks, because if it was not the winning, it was the taking part, we wouldn't demean other players' achievements because they didn't win a ring.
It's ludicrous as well. All of these people employed in the front office of franchises, their job description is not, oh, make us good, but not too good. It's make us as good as we can be to have the best chance of winning a championship. Of course they're going to do that.
Yeah, or lose your job.
Yeah.
And even when you've assembled the super team like the Durant Warriors, you're two injuries away from not winning. And, you know, as horrific as those injuries were.
Unless you've got James Harden on your team, and then he can just win everything on his own anyway.
Yeah, that worked out well. But I know you've listened to this podcast series as well. One of the stories that came out of it, which really blew my mind, the Athletic's shattered Knicks pod. You shared it on the Discord. Yeah. Matt shared it with me as well. And what blew my mind was one of the stories I hadn't heard before was how the Golden State Warriors in the early 90s, I want to say 92, 93, tried to coax Patrick Ewing away from the Knicks because there was a clause in his contract that said if he wasn't one of the top four players in the league, then he could walk away. So they were restructuring Chris Mullin's contract to pay him to basically backload it. So they paid him less to start with and more later on in order to get Ewing. So, you know, that's, well, okay. Were we 30 years away from that now? Makes me feel even older. And this isn't new. This has been going on. It's been going on before that. We saw the way that the Boston used to run things in the 60s was all very, I want to call it underhand, the way Red Auerbach used to engineer some of those moves. But I'm kind of glad that Ewing didn't go to Golden State at that time because it would have absolutely butchered a fantastic Run TMC nickname. But can you imagine if that starting unit had been on the floor together in that era? That would have been ridiculous because, I mean, I'm not sure Hardaway's a Hall of Famer, but Mitch Richmond is. Mitch Richmond is. Chris Mullin obviously is a Hall of Famer and a Dream Teamer, and Patrick Ewing's also a Dream Teamer and a Hall of Famer. That to have those guys in there are almost peaks together could have been devastating the way they played. We also sort of, I've noticed we look at super teams from a non-linear perspective in that we see all the names and, oh, they're all superstars. But what we don't look is actually, well, LaMarcus Aldridge's talent was there, but is currently here. And there doesn't seem to, and that worked out really well because that was a visual description for everyone listening on audio. Basically, the point I was trying to make is that their name carries more merit than their current capabilities do. And I think that's not taken into consideration enough.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think one of the biggest arguments I'd also make about super teams is if you look at the Lakers and Celtics teams of the 80s, those teams were stacked. And
yeah, when you've got former MVP Bill Walton coming off your bench.
And that the league was built around two rival super teams in the 80s. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue it's a new thing.
Yeah. Okay, obviously some teams can rely on their market location as a big draw. Teams like LA, I would almost say LA is the only one that can rely solely on the market because we've seen from the Knicks themselves. So if this is a sore point that they have to have, you have to have some sort of organizational structure in order to also, be able to attract the right talent to build around. So most teams in the NBA can't do it that way. Most teams have to build through the draft.
I'd actually put Miami in there as well. Miami has always been a big lure for players.
Yeah. I'd include Miami in there. I think they've always sort of... I mean, obviously, they picked Shaq up in a trade. They drafted D-Wade. They've only been around since, what was 91 the first season? Or was it a bit earlier than that?
Sounds about right.
And, they had a good run in the 90s with Tim Hardaway and Alonzo Mourning, that sort of teams. I'd include them in there as well. But for majority of the teams, it's about how to draft correctly to build your team up to perform well for the long term. Essentially, we've seen the way that teams now are hoarding assets in order to try and maximize their chances in the future. And this was something you wanted to talk about in particular, in that the way that teams draft now has changed drastically in terms of how they used to draft. Obviously, the history of the draft, you originally used to get like 8 rounds, and we had guys like Reggie Lewis was drafted in the 84. Was it Reggie Lewis? What was his name? The Olympic Carl Lewis?
Carl Lewis, yeah.
Bruce, what's his name?
Jenner.
Bruce Jenner was drafted in one of the drafts. Now Caitlyn Jenner. I don't keep up with the Kardashians. What an excellent pun that was. that was terrible. I'll go home. I am home. We're all home. So most teams have to build through the draft. And what was once a case of drafting exclusively, or, you know, 98%, as you put it, from the NCAA pool of players, has now changed dramatically in the last couple of years. So I know this is something you want to pick up with. But in addition to the NCAA now, we've got the G League Ignite. We've got Australia's NBL, which provides, I think they've got two spots per roster where they give about 70K to prospect players. Like, so for example, LaMelo spent time there last year. Josh Green, who was drafted 18th, was there as well. We've obviously got Europe, which, despite being a basketball powerhouse for decades, is still somewhat overlooked, I'd say. Supported by the fact that just 3 years ago, Luka Doncic went third in the draft, when quite clearly he should have gone above DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley III. So we hear stories about Giannis being scouted a number of years before he's drafted. And now we've got leagues like the Elite League. Was it the Elite League? Overtime Elite that we talked about the other week, which is 16 to 18-year-olds. So I just wanted to... This is just a huge minefield for scouts and GMs to work their way through now. And it's changed drastically. How do you think that teams can keep up with this changing globalization of the game, stretching them? Obviously, we've got the BAL as well that started this year.
So my take on this is actually it is impossible now. When in the mid-90s, say, when 99% of prospects for the draft played in college, they were directly comparable. They'd even often be playing games against one another, and you had kind of direct reference points to compare performance against one another. Now that is absolutely completely blown out of the water. Even if we just look at college now, you have one and done guys who often are going to mid majors, even because they'll have a bigger role at those schools. The bigger traditional schools who aren't one and done factories, like North Carolina, say, are typically trying to go with older guys because they're the ones who typically actually win the tournament now. Because if you've got a squad of 22-year-olds, they're going to be so much more experienced, bigger, stronger than the most talented 18-year-old in the world. So that you've got, it's hard to even measure what you're really looking at in college basketball now. So like Cade Cunningham at Oklahoma State this season doesn't go on like a crazy run in the tournament. And we're probably never going to see anything like Michigan's Fab Five or the UNC teams with like Stackhouse and Rasheed Wallace or Vince Carter and Anton Jameson on the same teams anymore. That's just not kind of going to happen. But equally, like if you imagine there's a, let's take a top five in any draft, one of them is has scoring 10 points per game for a EuroLeague team. There's another guy scoring 20 points for an NCAA Division I school, and there's another guy scoring 16 points a game in Australia. And there's another guy who's putting up 15 in the G League. How do you possibly try and compare those players who are playing against different levels, against different experience levels, age brackets, professionalism? It's like, it's an absolute minefield. And this kind of feeds into my general thoughts on the draft anyway, where if I ran the NBA, and I probably should, to be honest, I would make the draft a complete lottery every single season. So with no favoritism towards bad teams. So the lottery would be an actual lottery with every single team having the same chance of winning, which would make it anarchic. And that's what I want, because any single draft pick you got from another team, if it was first round, it could be incredibly valuable. And it's hard to, because what we see in transaction at the moment is you see, it's basically impossible to follow a lot of times, because there'll be, oh, and they get a pick unless it's, but it'll be like pick protected. So if it's top 10, say, they don't get the pick anymore. And it's like, the way I would envision it would be a lot simpler and it'd be more interesting.
So would you remove pick protections as well then? So
yes.
So that if they trade a first round pick, that could be the 30th pick, or it could be the first pick. Oh my God, that's carnage.
That's what I want.
I can just see you walking away with the Joker makeup on.
I just think it would just make the NBA way more interesting, where you take Tyrese Halliburton, who's going to be miserable and never watched on the Kings now for at least his rookie contract. Let's say he'd winded up on the Lakers. That would be a really interesting thing to watch. I just think it'd be way more fun if good players could end up on good teams on their rookie deals.
I suppose to a degree you'd hope it would incentivize mediocre franchises. I think the issue you'd get back, obviously, as commissioner, you need to think about winning over a two-third majority of your board of governors. I think the issue you'd have is that people would say, well, okay, so the Lakers could have LeBron and AD and a top pick, and the Nets could have the same.
Just try and... And the bigger thing for me is I can't get on board with any kind of rewarding being bad. And then we see teams actively trying to be bad. I just don't think there should ever be a scenario where you're incentivized to be bad.
I mean, it would fix tanking.
Exactly.
That's without not doubt, not only which tanking, has been a bane of the NBA.
There's tanking and there's different types of tanking. There's we're going to actively strip our squad of talent. There is, oh, this guy is not really injured, but we're going to tell him to go home anyway. All of these things do not have a place in the NBA for me. Every game should be, at the very least, a matter of pride to try and win. Because for me, that's what sport is about. And so I just personally can't get on board with any sense of incentivizing losing.
What tools or weapons would a small market have in their arsenal to attract free agents then? Because obviously they're not all blessed with
salary
market.
Cap.
And that... Okay, so I can offer you X amount and another team can offer you X amount of max contracts
that fit into the NBA. A proportion of them have to be for non-major markets. And that's the way it's always worked. And I don't see why that wouldn't work. You'd see it would be the same as it is now. And where I'm going with that is because drafting is such an inexact science, very rarely now unless it's like a LeBron or an Anthony Davis, or very rarely is the top pick or even beyond the top pick. NBA drafts very rarely now go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 after even like 2 years of watching them play in the NBA in terms of how they actually, if you redrafted them, how they'd be picked. So in another way, I think it will matter less and less because drafting is becoming such an inexact science. You could get the best player in the draft at 5 or 7.
See, so my issue comes back to contracts, and if team A can offer X and team B can offer X, they're going to go with the place they'd rather be, which ultimately leaves team B.
That's the same as now in free agency.
Yeah, but that means we're going to get an exacerbated form of these albatross contracts that people can't trade. Like, I don't know.
Why would you get more of them?
We're going to get...
Because these guys are still coming in rookie deals. This is just the draft. This isn't free agency.
No, but we're saying the way of controlling... basically, you've taken away the small market chance or the weaker team chance of getting new talent. Therefore, they need to take other talent. The only way they can get that, because predominantly that's a smaller market, the only way they can get that is by overpaying. Because if you offered a max salary to a player, and then someone like the Lakers, or we keep saying the Lakers, someone like Miami offered them 75%. On an incentivized deal, they'd probably take that deal.
But then I believe take less money. In a free market where if a team is going to be dumb and overpay for a guy, they're going to do it. But the market will dictate a player's worth, because if a team is willing to pay X amount, that's the value of the player. So I'm just not that worried about it.
Okay, fair enough. Great comment from Magic Fan G. Maybe a playoff of all non-playoff teams for the number one pick. I voiced something similar a couple of years ago where you didn't get the number one pick necessarily, but to incentivize winning, you'd have like a playoff tournament, and for each win you got, it would boost your draft odds by X percent. I think it worked out. I did some weird maths on it and gave them like extra 0.5% for each win. So do you think there's the idea of a secondary tournament and therefore a secondary revenue stream would be a good
option.
I
like the idea of it, but the thing I'm cynical about is players want to win an NBA championship. Players don't care about the number one pick. And you'd end up in a strange scenario where players are essentially playing for someone to come and take their role on the team if they get the number one pick. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't probably work from a player perspective just because of human nature, in that I don't think if you're a 30-year-old vet, you particularly care whether the team gets the number one or the number two pick.
No, true. Okay, we've gone along on that. We probably could go a lot longer as well. Kirk,
nothing
play that intro.
But Nick silly nonsense.
Okay, so I hinted about this topic earlier. But about, a week, maybe just over now, where do you rank the circumstances surrounding Paul Pierce and ESPN parting ways? He launched Instagram Live with a group of strippers with himself visibly under the influence of illicit substances, as I'm going to describe them. In terms of your favorite weird and inexplicable things current or former players have done.
I mean, this is like a real open season, because there are some weird and inexplicable things that have happened in the NBA. Firstly, the video on this, I watched it and I was just kind of like, I couldn't get over it. I mean, I'd probably put it in a similar range to Rodman marrying himself whilst wearing a wedding dress. I'd put it lower than Jamal Murray or Draymond Green accidentally Snapchatting or Instagramming their Magic Johnsons. I'd put it above J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert also being obviously on illicit substances whilst doing a national interview. And I think, didn't Shumpert say hello to his mum?
I think so, yeah.
So I'd put it in that sort of range. But I wondered if you'd heard this one. This one, I've heard it a few times. I'd put it way below the weird story of ABA legend John Brisker, who was a bit of a hard bastard, basically, but disappeared after retiring from the NBA, and it's speculation that he died as a mercenary in Uganda.
That is mental.
That, I think, is the weirdest basketball rather than NBA story I'm aware of. But so I think it falls way short of that, and I've put it in that Rodman weird section.
So for me, this falls into one of a category that I think of as, like, NBA players never fail to astound me. So if we take Myers Leonard earlier this season, for example.
Oh god, yeah.
And you take, like, a random guy and say, look, we're going to pay you millions of dollars to sit on the bench for the Miami Heat. And do you know what? You're going to have loads of free time when you're not in the weight room or at practice. You've probably got enough time to become really good at video games, and you're going to earn some extra money on the side too doing that. You've just got to do one thing. You've just got to not be racist, all right? That's the one thing you've got to do. And he still can't do it. It's like absolutely unbelievable. And, like, in this case, right, Paul Pierce, you're a smart guy. You're an unbelievable player in your time. We're really going to value your analysis. You've just got one thing you can't do. You cannot go on Instagram Live on drugs with strippers. And what does he do? It's like, it's incredible. I love it.
I'd love to know what goes through his mind when he's like, you know what I really need right now? Instagram Live. This would really set this off. Sorry, carry
just,
on.
Some other things that baffled me that were top of mind when I thought of NBA players doing bizarre things. Larry Bird injuring his back and essentially ending his own career by building a driveway for his mother. So he didn't have enough money to pay someone else to do that.
He mangled his hand as well,
yeah.
Playing softball right before he was due to start his rookie
season.
Unbelievably
Larry Bird story, that one. Shaq just making the movie Kazam in general. Dion Waiters, gummies on a plane. Still waiting for the movies.
Oh, forgot about gummies on a plane.
And the infamous MJ cigar cutter injury, severing a tendon in his shooting hand.
Yeah,
which is
right index finger.
So I think that was right after the 98 finals. So Wizards MJ was kind of functioning with a deformed right hand.
Yep, and broken ribs to start with, thanks to Ron Artest. But we won't go down an MJ rabbit hole. That was Nick's silly nonsense. That was indeed silly, but excellent. Talking on D, our discourse on Discord, there was some, obviously with the WNBA season due to start next month, we've got the draft this week, so the NBA WNBA channel is popping right now. Kirk's just thrown up some of the jerseys. Let's just quickly get into that because we had a question on that from Matt Hardy. Can we get your thoughts on WNBA jerseys for the pod? Best looking and best story for each of you. Chicago Sky Explorer edition, which is the black blue pinstripe, looks the best in his opinion. And the Connecticut Suns Kizusk Rebel edition is the best story. Thanks. So what was your best looking and best story?
So best looking, and I am determined to buy this jersey when I find it available somewhere easily. The Indiana Fever Rebel edition, which is like a Stranger Things collab. Obviously the TV show is set in Indiana and I love that show in general. So that is my best looking for me. And the best story, I went for the Washington Mystics Rebel edition, which in a kind of line going down the jersey has the script of the 19th Amendment to the US Constitution, which is gave the women the right to vote. So I thought, yeah, it was an interesting story. And looking down the stories, there were only maybe two or three that weren't just like marketing guff. So yeah, that stood out to me, that one.
Yeah, I found it difficult to pick a best looking one because there was a lot of awesome jerseys in there. I really like the new Seattle look. I like the Phoenix Mercury look. I agree with you. The Stranger Things collab is incredible, but best looking, I'm not really sure I could pull off. Like, it kind of looks like blood splatter, and I'm not really sure I could pull it off. But my missus, who has, you know, limited to zero interest in the NBA or the WNBA, basketball in general, she saw the jersey and went, "Oh, that's that show we watched, isn't it?" I was like, "Yes, well done. That is a." sorry, she doesn't listen back to this, so she won't realise I've just taken the mick out of her. I thought the Aces jersey actually took a step back from what it was last season, and I loved the Liberty's Equality jersey where they'd written that across the top. Matt's right about the Kizusk being a fantastic story, which is the indigenous Mohegan tribe's word for sun. And I'm not a big fan of the jersey, but I did really like the concept behind this. So my favourite concept, even though I wouldn't buy the jersey, is the Chicago glass ceiling one, where it's got the smashing it. I wouldn't wear it, but I just love the idea of and what it represents. We also have got a bit of a fantasy league update because it's playoff time. So, Kirk, did you want to pop up the older playoff tree? He's going to say no now. He hasn't got it ready. Oh, there we go. Here we go. It's on there. So our regular season has come to an end and we have our playoffs starting this week. If you're not already, come join the Discord because you can get in early for next season. But let me just flip it up because Kurt's got it on a screen that's so small I can't see it right now, which is fine. It's going to be interesting. So basically the way the playoffs work is the same as the regular season. You play the whole week and the winner of the most categories advances to the next round. One of the brackets, number 15 versus number 2, is actually our very own Nick Whitfield and our very own Kirk Killick. So Kirk's probably not going to talk, so he can give some weird drops in here. But how are you feeling entering this playoff?
Not terribly confident. I had I've told my fantasy story on this pod 100 times now. I had an abysmal start, and I did pretty well to get back into the playoff picture. It was a season of two halves for me. And Kirk's been pretty consistent through the whole thing. So, yeah, not very confident.
It turns out that Kirk's sage advice at the start of the season proved true, which was set your lineup now as far in the future as it will let you. Because that served him well. Kirk, did you want to add anything?
Next.
Okay, so we've got... So this is the first of four rounds of the playoffs. Obviously... The regular season ended with a banned word team undefeated. So it should be interesting. And he's facing his good old mate in the first round. So we'll keep you updated with who wins. Well, basically, the ultimate fantasy league title, because There is no prize or anything. It is literally pride.
We should get a title belt for it, though. I think that would be appropriate.
I might actually have like the plastic one I had as a kid somewhere in my mum's house. So when we're not restricted from visiting other people indoors, I might do that. I might try and dig it out. It might fit someone's thigh. We also discussed doing a watch along. So if you want to get involved, we're going to look at doing that. Head to discord.me/doubleclutch and come chat hoots with us all the time. A couple of listener questions and then we'll finish because I'm conscious we're running a little bit long. Richard Fang. Looking at the end of the season, if you could right now choose who you think could be a dominant team in the playoffs in both the West and the East, and who you think the potential sleeper team could be in the East and West. So who have you got as your dominant teams?
Oh, let me look at the standings. Dominant team, the Nets in the East, and in the West... Oh, West is more difficult. Utah.
Ooh, okay. So the dominant team I've gone for is quite simply the Lakers, because once they're fit and healthy, they dominated last year. And I've gone for Philly in the East based purely on they can win without their star player. And I know that obviously the Nets have three incredible players. My concern is the body of work that they've got to get to, you know, the three of them together in order to pull this together. So that's where there's a bit of concern on my part. I honestly, you know, the minute I picked Philadelphia, I was like, it's going to be the Nets. But I don't know, I'm just hedging that there might be some chemistry issues just purely because they've not played enough minutes together and there will be some closer games. I still think they're probably going to be the favourites, though, by a long shot. Sleepers, who have you got?
So I picked them last week as the team I thought would get the final home court slot, the Hawks in the East, who since last week have continued to play incredible basketball and still look really good. So this could be the year Trae Young, John Collins, people like that really kind of make their name in the playoffs. In the West, can't really say Denver anymore because they had a good run last year. Memphis. They've got a young upstart roster that are pretty inconsistent, but on any given night, I feel like they can beat any team. So they could definitely... They're capable of a shock first round win. I'm not saying they will, but they're capable of it.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's fair. I think that the Grizzlies could, you know, they could be fantastic. Some of the players they've got, you know, not massive names outside of Ja Morant, but guys like Justice Winslow, albeit is never able to stay healthy, is an absolute asset to that team.
Also, just I was going to say, yeah, the season Valanciunas has had, incredible.
Yeah, Dylan Brooks, I sort of had a dig at him the other week for earning $12 million, but actually is a pretty solid two-way player.
They have other guys as well, like Grayson Allen, who on any given night, like he had 30 points the other night. They have a load of guys.
That was against the Hawks as well, wasn't it? The 30 points. It was, they called it a revenge game after Trae Young had tweeted a video of him being tripped by Grayson Allen in their first encounter. So my sleeper in the East, I debated going Atlanta, and I actually went for Boston. I've gone off-piste here because Boston at the start of the season, everyone was raving about. And in the last week, I've seen cries for both Brad Stevens' head and Tatum's contract to be traded. So I, you know, not a lot of people have expectations for them anymore. And I think they could surprise a few people.
I think, sorry, Mike, just on the Celtics, I think it kind of talks to their season, though. The fact we could even describe them as a surprise team kind of talks as to how disappointing most of their season has been up to this point.
Yeah, I mean, how hot that initial start was where Brown and Tatum were just playing out of their skins entirely. But it's tough to keep that up for a whole season. And I think people forget that and get wrapped up too early in those stats when they come out the gates absolutely flying. Out West, I thought this was going to resonate a lot more, but you kind of ruined it. My sleeper team is the number one seed Utah Jazz because no one is talking about them as being a championship contender. They're getting such horrific disrespect. We're not talking about them enough, and we actually like them. And they don't have an MVP candidate, despite being like three games clear at the top of the West with the best record in the league. It's absolutely obscene.
And not only that, they've gained a super fan in John Cleese now. So there's nothing that can stop them.
that should have been in the bizarre NBA stories. It's just mad. But apparently he's been a fan, though, for over 20 years, which sort of puts it back to Stockton and Malone days.
That's what I was thinking as well, because I'm pretty sure, like, he's lived in the States for quite a long time now, but he lives in California. So I'm just, like, confused how he ended up being a Utah Jazz fan.
It's weird. I know he's onto his fourth wife, so without causing any offense to anyone, I don't know if that's a thing. final question. Point Wolf Ange. With the Minnesota Timberwolves getting taken over by new ownership, is there any other franchise you would like to see someone take over, and who would it be? I'll let you set this up, see if
who do you think I might pick?
Well, I think you might pick who I would, was my immediate first guess as well, which is your beloved New York Knicks.
There we go.
Remove that kazoo playing thin-skinned, what was it he was called on that podcast? Go listen to Shattered, it's great. Chuck D is the MC for it. But they called him a thin-skinned man-child? Something like that. And it was, yeah, he's going to listen to that, and Chuck D's going to be banned from MSG for life. I agree with you there. The other choice I'd have is the Wizards. Get Ted Leonisis out of there. He's been around since Abe Pollin sold it to him, but he was around for a long time before that. And that franchise is just stale with indoctrinated rot, I'll call it. Cool. Let's move on to games of the week. Who have you got?
The Nets at the Sixers, midnight, Wednesday, Thursday morning. Two best teams in the East. Yeah, looking forward to watching it.
I also have the Nets. No, I don't. I have the Sixers, though. I have the Clippers at the Sixers. It's 12 a.m. on Saturday because the Sixers are just, like I say, I think they could be a very, very dominant postseason team, and the Clippers have been on a bit of a tear. So it should be another awesome game. That's about it for us tonight. So thank you to everyone who has tuned in, listened, watched, consumed in any way, shape or form. If you're not already, make sure you're following us at Double Clutch UK, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Discord.me/Double Clutch is our Discord community. Twitch.tv/Double Clutch UK is where you can watch us every Monday at 9 p.m. Shout outs to followers on Twitch, McKenz, subscriptions from Nick D. Hogan, who we think might be the son of Hulk Hogan, but we're not disappointed if it's not.
I am going to be incredibly disappointed if it's not.
And on Discord, we had Ollie and Ben Salk ID2. So shout out to you guys for getting involved with the community. Anything you want to add before we close this out at all, Nick?
He's mentioned it several times in the comments that I spotted. Shout out to Elliot for a fresh jersey that I'm wearing tonight, along with a few others I picked up in his sale.
Nice.
Hopefully you were trying to buy already, Mike.
Well, I was looking at two jerseys because I don't know if I'm a large or an XL. I just don't know. I've got XLs and they seem a little too big now. And then I don't have any larges to really compare it to. So I was watching two. One of them was an XL Dame Lillard, and that went. And I almost threw my thing across the wall. I need to know these sizes before I just start looking at the products. And it's my fault, not his, because he's offered to help me many times and I'm just rubbish. So on that note, I will close with this. We each have a star. All we have to do is find it. Once you do, everyone sees it and will be blinded. Good night. See you next week.
Oh my God! Jamal, please! Jamal, please!